is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, the topic today on Viewpoint, friends, is really the political charade, and it kind of all wraps and ties into election 2020, which is certainly the heat of the battle is going to start right now. You've got the COVID that is resurfacing, and all of the political stories about that is happening, of course. There's a lot of other news that, but it really will all sort of come around the election 2020. You're seeing this vote by mail thing, and you've got voter integrity, which is a real concern. A lot of other stories as well. Let's get started here, and I want to bring on Michael Johns. He's the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement, a former White House speechwriter, and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. The public brainwashing is what my real concern is, that I think people need to understand what's happening here. And I think the question is, how much of this drumbeat that is happening right now is brainwashing and impacting people? For instance, I was on the interstate yesterday driving, and I see a gentleman on the side of me with just himself in the car, just a man himself in the car, and he's got a full mask on. I mean, a full mask and garb on his mouth so he can't breathe, I mean, supposedly, right? So he's not going to catch the virus. So what's happened now is I'm afraid that with this thing resurfacing in a lot of states and they're starting to pull back and all of that happens and the election is in full swing, now you've got this sort of panic out there where people are literally being brainwashed and think that somehow we've all got to do our duty and wear the mask even when we're by ourselves in a car, isolated. I mean, what purpose does that really serve? Which means that people are really not listening and paying attention. They're just going along with whatever the betters tell them to do and whatever the media says, which to me is a real danger sign. Now put that there a moment, and then let me follow up with this here. Joe Biden, I think it was on Friday, but he was on a bench there, and he was doing his, with the camera, the political speak, and he had a mask, and the mask, he drops a little bit so he can talk. Now, I wonder how many people, if the public, how much of the public really picks up on someone like Biden, who really is just wearing for aesthetic purposes this mask business. There's nobody around him. There is no purpose for it other than that you want to show America that you're being a good boy and you're listening to the people that tell you to wear a mask, Mr. Biden, because there was nobody in his area that a mask would impact by any degree, yet he's doing that for the cameras. What am I missing here? Do you see where I'm at?
I do see where you're at. And, you know, I think you kind of have two sides to this. On one hand, when you look at the two biggest issues that are confronting our country or perceived to be confronting our country right now, public health and the management of the coronavirus, and then also the issue of the ongoing George Floyd reaction, both point to issues that are legitimate and real and were real even before coronavirus and George Floyd. I mean, we've always had concerns about public health, and we've always had concerns about getting rid of any racial prejudice in any and all aspects of American society. Those are legitimate objectives. Unfortunately, in both cases, and particularly in an election year, you end up having these issues manipulated, in some cases maybe unduly elevated, and sometimes overstated. Now, I pointed out, for instance, on the George Floyd issue, the numbers don't support the thesis that we have systemic racism, at least in the use of lethal force by police against African Americans. With 375 million encounters last year between law enforcement and civilians, of those, 19 unarmed Caucasian Americans were killed, and 9 unarmed African Americans were killed. So it's a very small percentage, but there might be issues of, and likely are issues of, racial prejudice in other areas of policing. On coronavirus, you know, I said from the beginning, and I think it's borne out to be true, that this was a real threat, that it needed to be taken seriously. I did not join in many of the reopen rallies and movements, even though I was asked to. simply because I thought it was in many cases premature. That's borne out. Some people even at those rallies ended up, obtaining the coronavirus. But the point is, we've got to navigate this based on science and real facts. And it's unfortunately, it gets to be complex because one of the primary issues you got to look at is that this administration has taken this issue very seriously from the very beginning. It started with the ban on China travel, and then it went on to the fact that they, made all of this effort to make these ventilators available, to pursue treatment modalities and the vaccine. And importantly, we really haven't had any American die from federal governmental neglect on this issue, nor has Joe Biden or any Democrat been able to point out anything they would have done differently that would have saved the life of even one American.
You say that there. Now, let me play this for you here. Biden, you say how many people died here. When Joe Biden, the image I set up front where he's on the bench, he's got the mask falling off his face, and he's trying to tell America he's being a good boy. He's listened to the betters, the people who are telling him to do what he's got to do. And so listen to this quick audio clip, and he'll tell you how many are dead in America.
What people drastically underestimate is the impact on the mental health of people who now everything is complicated. Not only is the healthcare piece, but people don't have a job. People don't have anywhere to go. They don't know what they're going to do. And a lot of people you have unnecessarily. Now we have over 120 million dead from COVID.
So you hear Biden there. He says there, now we have over 120 million dead, and everybody was aghast. Now, again, had President Trump made that same claim, that would have been a front page story on every publication going, but right away the media buries that quickly. And what they're doing is they're calling it a gaffe, just a typical Biden gaffe. So here's the question. How much of these things, every time Joe Biden speaks, there is a major deficit of facts, data, or even to have a clear sentence you can understand that makes some sort of sense, where you can connect one thought to another thought, let alone statements like this that come out of the woodwork that there's no logic whatsoever behind it all. How much of that would you consider a legitimate gaffe, which he has had some over the years? We get that. A lot of politicians do, actually, but he's had his share, compared to the fact that there is a health problem with this man.
Yeah, I think that's really ultimately the question. I don't know the answer to it is, whether this is a man, I've never considered him to be particularly articulate. He's routinely been prone to misstatements, but they seem to be more immense and repetitive in recent months than they have been historically. So what does that suggest ultimately? I mean, I think voters have to decide that. And I think if Biden was really serious about, the country and leadership in the country, he would be forthright really in sort of saying, here's what's going on. It either is or is not a clinical issue. If it's not a clinical issue, and it's simply one of maybe memory and routine aging, and nothing of diagnostic categorization, then he should say that. But I think he kind of owes, I think there have been so many of these now that he really almost has to answer the question of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, can you understand him when he talks? Do you get all the, that's not just a gaffe when you hear him speak. I mean, and it's a very limited amount of time you hear him speak anymore because they have him put away and guarded and protected like a fine piece of china somewhere. I mean, do you comprehend everything he says?
No.
No. No.
But I think, quite honestly, I'll just say this in fairness. It's a very difficult undertaking. Running for president and having every word that you articulate, diagnosed by critics and by the other side.
So you have
to have some degree of flexibility.
Right, but that doesn't apply here. But come on, apply here. No,
what I'm getting to the point is there's routine misstatements. I mean, Reagan certainly had a few. But then there's this, which is kind of like a. Misstatements as regularly as he's making accurate statements.
Yeah.
And I think it gets to a point of, is that something the American people are comfortable with in a leader of their country? I mean, it's sensitive question, but I think it's one ultimately, we shouldn't have to guess at what's going on with this guy.
No. This is important. And the problem is, when I talk about a political charade, this is exactly what I'm talking about, because the media doesn't put any truth whatsoever out there. I mean, you can't get any truth from them. And this is the kind of thing you're hearing all the time. You know, there's a media narrative here that is very, very dangerous to freedom that concerns me, because the media is pumping up all the polls that Trump is way behind. They've gone behind in all the swing states and all of that. And even, I'll give you an example here. And I mean, and a lot of people listening here would listen to Fox, because that's the only sense of any normalcy they can try to get. But they also complain and bitch about Fox as well, as everybody does. I mean, there's no happy mode here that's going to get anybody excited. But the news itself is in a free fall. I mean, it's plummeting from any level of truth. But, you know, I was watching, I seen a clip on a Fox station here. And just to give an example, this is, and this could play on anywhere, CNN, NBC, anything else, but this happened to be on Fox at that moment here. And I just happened to catch it, because I don't really watch them much at all. And it says, and then on Fox, so they immediately went, they were talking about the polls, the president's way behind, he's falling behind, there's no way he's going to make this ground up. This is Biden's to lose. Look at all of this, people. Now, they learn nothing historically from polls whatsoever. They don't want to know nothing. And then they go right after that story, right? And by the way, did you see that last rally the president had in Oklahoma? Wow, he had thousands of empty seats there. What do you think's going on, Marge? I don't really know. It's like The Simpsons, you know? What's really going on there? I mean, his popularity is declining. And do you see, so they take one narrative, build it to another narrative, and then put a story out there that the president is failing there. You've got to be concerned with that.
Yeah, I think, but if you look, a few points worth considering here. Number one, as it relates to populist support for the president showing up at these actual rallies, I can't think of any president in modern history who's had greater attendance or greater enthusiasm. And on that issue of enthusiasm, I think those who have some degree of political sophistication on these polls realize that the actual the general polling themselves are a little bit interesting, but maybe more interesting is this enthusiasm gap. And the fact that, you know, while you might have in recent polls Biden up by say 10 points nationally, when you drill down to how likely are those people to actually come out and vote, the most recent one I'd seen, this is a Washington Post poll earlier, a few days ago, 87% definitely for Trump, 74% for Biden. I've seen numbers that have shown that gap as big as 20 points. Mm-hmm. So it's intriguing that if people answering a major media outlet's poll say they're going to vote for Biden and telepolster that, that's one thing. Whether they actually turn out in November and you know, yeah. cast that yeah. ballot and cast that vote is another.
Let me ask you this to clear up on the polls a moment here. You've been around, and not to put any, this is not about your age now, but you've been around a long time around politics, and you understand how it works in D.C. and what happens here. How do you compare, honestly, the accuracy of the polls today that are being reported versus, in the way that they will pan out, I'm saying, versus 20 years ago?
Well, they're vastly more inaccurate today. They're vastly less reliable. Mm-hmm. They're almost systematically unreliable. I'm almost not particularly moved to even cite them because of their unreliability. I think that's the first and foremost takeaway from the 2016 election is that you had gaps of, you know, comparable points with Hillary Clinton to what you're showing now with Biden in 2016. And this president not only won that election, but get away from this argument that he lost the popular vote. That wasn't the game that was being played. Everyone knew it was over electoral votes, and Trump would have done a lot more in New York and California and other locations where he I think, could have gotten much more support if that's what it was about. He ultimately won that electoral college vote fairly convincingly.
Back to the political charade I'm talking about here, the thread that I want people to understand. what the media wants the people to believe right now is the president is grossly behind and he is going to lose in November. In other words, this is part of that brainwashing that is going on. I mean, I really believe this. Now, when you look at, let's talk about the silent majority a moment here. In 2015, 2016, like you just said, the polls said one story and they were blown out of the water. They were all aghast when, you know, election came around and their mouse fell on the floor because it wasn't going to be President Hillary. I think what people are asking me right now, what does the silent majority look like right now? People are really nervous, Michael, with this race. I mean, I feel it like the intensity is so incredible. I mean, I can't even describe it. I get so much in here at the network and people are really tense and they're asking, how big is that silent majority this time? Are these polls true? Is the media right this time? I mean, they're nervous, really nervous about a President Biden. And so I would say with that silent majority, do you think that silent majority below the waterline has expanded or grown at all? Or do you think it's just stayed the same, talking about his base? What do you think it is?
I think you can start with pretty safely saying a few things. One is that the 63 million Americans who turned out in 2016 to vote for President Trump are generally pretty pleased and enthusiastic about his performance and are going to turn out in 2020 and vote for him again. So, you know, one of the fears, I think, if you looked at the, whether it was Obama or Trump or any president, you look at, is there an erosion in the base? You know, like if there's the perception right. that he's not delivering on things he promised, or if he's, you know, even moving in other directions, you might see people in the base that will leave. I think Biden, for instance, has that problem because I'm not really sure what the Joe Biden base is, who that demographic is. I don't think he completely satisfies the radical left that has become the increasingly populist foundation of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And I don't really believe in his failure to sort of rebuke them that he's been embraced by the centrists. The Congress that won't even negotiate in good faith, that almost just takes the complete opposite, you know, Democrat Party that just has zero interest in getting anything
done. Zero interest. You see Tim Scott this past week trying to get the police reform in play, right?
For
the
what possible reason could you articulate for not taking those incrementally constructive steps that Senator Scott put for you? I think he put a lot of work into trying to put that together. And it was bold. I mean, it took steps in restricting some of these more extreme law enforcement measures in non-threatening conditions and things like that. That would have been, I think, would have been immensely constructive and also addressed kind of the core of what I believe, unless I'm misinterpreting it, many of the peaceful protesters, those not engaged in this radical, you know, but violent revolutionary. That's what they want.
I want to talk briefly a moment here about this COVID resurfacing with you. Real brief, so you got to get on to some other stories here too. But so let's take a look at this right now. So you got Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Tennessee, Utah, all reported their highest ever caseloads, daily caseloads now in the last couple of days here. I mean, going through the roof, they're saying. Well, of course, the point of this all is that, as John Hopkins University says, they're reaching new highs, but they're testing a lot of people. In fact, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis came out and said that on Friday that nothing has changed, he said, in the last week. And the surge was the result of a test dump, he called it. Listen to that, Michael, a test dump. So, and at least nine other states, by the way, are also, they're stepping back their reopening phases. They've now delayed Arizona, Arkansas, Delaware, Idaho, Louisiana, Maine, Nevada, New Mexico, North Carolina have all now delayed their next opening phase. Now you have, you know, the bars are being closed in Texas and Florida, and everybody is getting pretty extreme with the things here. In fact, Governor Abbott out of Texas came out and said, if I could go back and redo anything, it probably would be to slow down the opening of the bars. And I can understand, because social distancing is the key to this whole trick here. If you're on top of each other and you're socializing in those close quarters, and wherever it is, you're going to have problems. I mean, that is just common sense beyond any mask conversation or anything else, you know? So right now, we're talking about 2.4 million cases have been reported, and is coming between 125,000 and 130,000 people, they're saying, supposedly have died. Now, well, you said earlier with the health crisis, and you've said that before, and I hear you when you say, well, no, it's a legitimate health crisis, Mel. And I mean, I get that. I'm not arguing that. But what I will argue is this. I think it is a complete farce, the amount of people they have as dead people in this country. They initially promised between 2 and 20 million to have any sort of grace here for locking down the entire nation. I don't believe we're anywhere near 125,000 dead. And the reason for that, Michael, is everybody from a hanged toenail to a cardiac problem to a diabetes problem to any other problem you had in your life that you died from, they chalked up to COVID. And all of these governors and mayors, it built and they emboldened those lists to show that a lot of people died. And those people would have died. Many of those people, you know, you don't stop dying from these other kinds of natural things that happen just because there's a pandemic. But yet all those deaths were charted to COVID. I bet you the amount of people who died from this are far less than half of that number. What do you say to that?
I agree with that. I think that's really been one of the areas that's likely been misrepresented. So you have like over 125,000 deaths, but those are people who died with a diagnosis of coronavirus and may have had these comorbidities. Mm-hmm. And if you excluded those comorbidities that themselves were fatal. That number would come down dramatically. I have no idea how far it would come down,
right.
But it would be lower. It would be lower. And so I don't know. I mean, we haven't lived through a pandemic of this magnitude in our lifetime. So there's not like a lot of sophistication on how you go about it. There's another thing you can't dismiss. And that is that this president, to his credit, I mean, he said, look, we're going to, and Democrats wanted the like testing. How many times did you hear like Nancy Pelosi, et cetera, say that? That's what they wanted done. So that's what this administration has done. And as of today, you have literally over 31 million tests in our country of coronavirus. So you're pushing up against 10% of the population that's been tested. As you expand that testing base, you're inevitably going to get more diagnoses of it. What's intriguing are the number of people who have both obtained this and recovered, and those who've had it and never even developed symptoms from it. You know, as of today, we have over a million cases of those 2.5 million that are fully recovered. So we keep talking about here are the total cases, but you got to back out a million who, you know, were sick for a few days.
Absolutely.
And then got better.
Listen, here's the thing. The final wrap of this is this here. You have the silence of the media. That's one of my biggest concerns here. In fact, it is my largest concern is there's no truth in anything we're getting. So when I talk about the deaths and what's really happening here, you know, they encouraged the whole nation to go peaceful protest, Michael. That was, yeah, that's all right. Yes, indeed. Constitutional right. Get out there, people. Bang those damn statues down. Act like a bunch of imbeciles. Sure, riot. I mean, that was all encouraged by all the media from sea to shining sea. That was a perfect, it's your right to go. And of course, peaceful protest. It's a joke is what it is. And then again, with Trump's rally, oh my God, I can't believe the president is doing this in Oklahoma. How dare he do this and put two people in a room together? This guy is a XYZ. And this is where this whole narrative gets out there then at that point. Now, you want to talk about why there's an increase in some of these states? Just go back and look at the videos and the tapes of all the protests and all the gatherings of all these people having their peaceful protests as they're burning shit down and knocking buildings down and doing all the everything else. Correct me if I'm wrong, please.
Well, you're not wrong, and I was and I'll give you not my view on it, but what a federal court ruled, and that was, you know, you had this U.S. District Judge Gary Sharper looked at the case of New York State and New York City, where religious practitioners were prohibited from gathering, and simultaneously, as you know, the state and particularly the city encouraged the protests. They took that position, and fortunately, there were a number of different plaintiffs across religious denominations who brought a federal case and prevailed. And they said, "Yeah, this is absolute First Amendment freedom of religion violation, and a double standard that's been put in place." I don't think you can deny. I'm not even sure the left would deny that there's been an unequivocal double standard as it relates to these things. You look at the horrific fear that they had with the reopened rallies, which, as I told you, I didn't embrace them either. But I didn't say thousands were going to die because of it.
Yeah. I would put nothing by the left, Michael, when you say you would think they won't deny it. I believe they would deny it because I think they're on one mission, and it's clear what that mission is right now. And by the way, on the monuments, yep. It really is. I have no faith whatsoever.
It's all about defeating Trump. If Trump had not put in place, say, the China travel restriction back on January 31, they would have been saying, why didn't you do that?
That's right.
You know, it's like nothing, even the most logical things that he's done that have proven immensely
constructive. It doesn't matter. Back before the whole COVID thing happened, we were running on all cylinders, Michael. Everything was, it was humming along, and they didn't know how they were going to defeat Trump. This is now after they were trying to impeach him for a phone call. This is after the obstruction of justice. This is after the 25th Amendment, because he's back. This is after the Russia collusion. Yeah, this is, I mean, the list goes so on and on. You can go back and forth and front and center and what have you. And now all of a sudden they realize, oh my God, this man might actually win another term, and he'll get to elect more Supreme Court justices. He'll have more conservative judges in the Ninth District and all these lower courts. And oh my God, what are we going to do? Great. Let's embrace the COVID pandemic thing. Great. Let's embrace the civil unrest and the racial, which brings me to a point. The president signed an executive order, by the way, on Friday that calls for the government to prosecute individuals who damage statues or monuments and to limit federal support to states. This was interesting. And law enforcement agencies that don't protect them. So the executive order calls for limiting federal funds to state and local jurisdictions if you don't do your job, if you don't protect these and stop the desecration of our monuments, memorials, and statues. This is a long time coming, don't you think?
Yeah, well-intentioned measure, but I feel the same way about it that I felt about a similar order that was put together on cutting off sanctuary city funding in this country. And that, of course, ended up promptly in the courts. And to my knowledge, unless I'm telling me if I'm missing anything, I don't believe $1 has been cut off to any sanctuary city across this country.
Yeah.
Despite a presidential executive order that be done, that in my judgment is completely consistent with the rule of law. But you have an activist, judges in all these jurisdictions who basically are legislating from the bench. I mean, it's like another, I've seen it described really much more graphically in recent weeks, particularly on the Supreme Court, that we had to almost get away from perceiving these to be neutral arbitrators of law and start realizing it's like a super legislature that's, put in place for life.
The last one I want to talk to you about is the Supreme Court declines Texas Democrats' request to allow all Texans to vote by mail. This is a storyline I want to talk to you more in depth ahead. We're limited on time now, Michael, but here's the deal. This is interesting because it gets kind of fascinating the way this whole thing lays out. The rules in Florida are different than the rules in California. The rules in California are different than the rules in Texas. So let's understand that first. And there are other things people are confused with as well. If you're a registered voter, like in the state of Florida or in other states that are like that, there's a legitimate mail-in ballot thing where you can legitimately vote by mail because it's part of, it's allowed. It's an absentee vote or vote by mail, absentee, call it whatever you want. It's the same thing. Yet there are others now where the governor, Newsom, California governor, just went ahead. He just did this last week, and he's thrown it all out there. They're sending a ballot to everybody in the state, whether you like it or you don't like it, as long as you, and that's what they're doing. And this is going to be the fight coming up now about the integrity of the election. This is the real big concern here. And now you see the Supreme Court rule on Texas. What do you think? Where does this all go?
Well, it was good ruling for starters, but again, it's exactly what you've been saying. It's that it's a politicization of these issues. If you're a governor and you're not discouraging people from protesting on the streets, if you're not telling them, hey, get off the streets right now because the health of the state and the county is in danger, you can't simultaneously turn around a few weeks later and file a lawsuit to have all of your ballots cast by mail because there's too much of a public health threat to show up at a voting facility that ostensibly could be regulated in a very sensible way. Yeah. So I find it completely politically charged. And we all know that Democrats want as many of these states to have mail-in votes because they're prone to, unfortunately, fraud and It's, you know, a very dangerous mechanism. Yeah, it's not absolutely set up that way.
Well, we've seen that before. We've seen the videos. We've seen the photographs with these ballots thrown all over the place. What would stop anybody from grabbing those ballots and just signing on? Nothing would stop them.
And that's You don't have to guess. You can look at every one of these locations almost where it's been put into effect, and there's been undeniable fraud. And it's just, it doesn't even need to be coordinated, right, because you're going to mail out ballots. You don't know if people are still at that location or if they're not at that location, ballot harvesting, all sorts of complicated and various ways through which individuals are voting on a ballot that is not authorized to them personally.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is a job that the federal government does so well. If you just look at how many stimulus checks they just sent out from the COVID business people, do you know how much of that went to dead people and people that are not even, it's in the billions. I seen the number just the other day here. It's in the stratosphere. If they do as swell of a job in the voting as they've done with that, God help us all, right? Which means that, you know, listen, And it's an argument I want you all to understand. Mail-in voting, absentee voting, because it's approved in your state and you're a registered voter, that's one thing. That's legit. That's great. That's fabulous. Taking and doing a free-for-all and throwing as much of this against the wall just because you can and let it run where it runs, that's another story entirely, a.k.a. Gavin Newsom and others that are trying that across the country here. It is going to be a fight of your life, people, between now and November 3rd. And if you want to wake up again on the morning of November 4th and have the nation back that you can recognize, I recommend you get involved in the game real quick here, friends. Big thank you to Michael Johns. A lot more show just ahead here, friends. Stay right there. More Viewpoints in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. There is a lot more news in the world. And you know, the thing to mention to you is that a lot of these big stories you hear nothing about because the media does not report them. They are on a one-track pony show here, and that is to get President Trump out of office. That is the only thing they care about. They don't care about what else is going on in the world. And so we need to make you informed of other stories here internationally also that are happening here. We'll do that next with Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She is a political commentator and host here and a great voice here at America Out Loud. One of the big stories, Ilana, that nobody is talking to and about here is about North Korea and Kim Jong-un. And very interesting in North Korea, fascinating story in the New York Times. I did catch the headline. And the headline, although they never answered the question in the story to what we're going to do right next here, but the headline was, why did Kim Jong-un's sister become the face of North Korea? So they're suggesting and saying on multiple reports now, she is running foreign policy there. Why is that, Ilana?
Well, Kim Jong-un hasn't been seen since April 11th. And the best intelligence that I have, and then I got this back on April 22nd, and I reported it on America Out Loud, that Kim had undergone heart surgery on April 12th, and they wanted to put a stent in place. He was not healthy to begin with. He was an overindulger in food and liquor and women, and he didn't take care of himself at all, and you know he was overweight, so... But in any case, the surgery was reported not to have gone well. They imported a surgeon from China, and apparently the surgery was botched in some way, or in any case, it was not successful. And as of the second half of April, he just disappeared. The best intelligence that I could get was that he was either brain dead and on life support, or he was altogether dead. He was not able to come and do anything for his country anymore. And then there was a question about how to deal with this in North Korea. They didn't want to announce that he was dead because he had no progeny to take over his position. In North Korea, the ruler goes from father to son, and that's how it was done for three generations. Mm-hmm. If he has a son, and he is thought to have three children, but nobody really knows, they're much too young to become ruler of the country. And the next in line, in the bloodline, was his sister. The North Korean government is led by a bunch of elders, and they did not want to have a woman in the seat of power. As a result, there was a lot of question, but if he is not able to come back and do his job, who will take over? It seems as though, and this is something that I wrote about at the very end of April, that she is going to take over the reins of power. And in fact, that's what I said at the end of April. In fact, in the meantime, she has consolidated her power. She is a very powerful woman. And when she is determined to do something, she does it. As a matter of fact, when Kim Jong-un became the leader of North Korea, he was not supposed to be in line. His older brother was in line to become the supreme leader. And she apparently, according to everything that I can glean from the intelligence, she apparently was instrumental in sabotaging his following in his father's footsteps and making sure that his younger brother instead became the supreme leader. So she is apparently very powerful, very determined. And in fact, she's called the Black Widow because she is known to be even more evil than her brother. And it seems as though she is now firmly in control.
Which, if that is the case, that would be the answer to the question as far as why did Kim Jong-un's sister become the face of North Korea, which is the question the New York Times ask out there. They don't answer it, but potentially we just did. And it goes further than that as well. And they are understanding, reports are, she is running foreign policy. Now, you have to imagine, if Kim Jong-un was in power, just do the math here, everybody. And the question, Alana, is this: would they allow this woman to run foreign policy and make the decisions she's going to make if he was still a whole of his faculties or alive? The answer to that would be unequivocally no. Is that correct?
That is correct. And he was a high level, the highest level advisor to him.
Right.
But she did not control him. She guided him.
Right.
And he allowed her to. If he were alive now and in control of his faculties, she would not be doing what
she would not
doing.
Be doing that, which is the answer to the Times thing right there. I mean, there it is right there. But a couple other points here. Many analysts are saying it's a classic good cop, bad cop. And this is hard to fathom for some people, that Kim Jong-un was be considered the good cop and the Kim Yo-jung, the sister, would be the bad cop in this case. But that just tells you what Alana's talking about right there. Very, very belligerent woman, not pleasant at all to deal with whatsoever here. And there were some other interesting stories over the last couple of weeks that Ilana in that area here, for instance, here, she warned of action in reprisal for threatening to destroy the inter-Korean, the liaison office there. And then if certain things, because there was some propaganda that was put on balloons, which they always send over the line there, and she didn't like it. And she blew up the, am I right to say that she blew the liaison office up? Is that correct?
Yes, she did. And the liaison office is very close to the border, so that the South Koreans could see it.
Right. So there you go. So you wouldn't have the sister would not be doing that. And those were the reports when that happened, Ilana. That was clear. That was her that made that decision. She wouldn't be making that decision if he was here. So let's start to do the math here. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Now, also, she also threatened to move troops into border regions that had been demilitarized. And although that hasn't happened yet, they're saying the powers to be there, Ilana, as I understand it, are saying that Kim Jong-un has halted those plans. So they're still playing like he is alive and that he's got the whole grasp of the nation. But you're saying it doesn't look likely, does it? It doesn't seem.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. The intelligence that I have is that he is still dead.
There's a photograph in the New York Times article, which is quite fascinating. And Kim Jong-un, or whether it's him or a body lookalike, because he's got several body lookalikes that almost look about identical people. You can't even tell them apart. I've seen them before. Ilana, you have as well. I know that.
Yes, and, I have. Yes,
so I want people to know that this is how these people operate. They're in another spaceship, people, really, though. And so you got on a red carpet, they got Kim Jong-un on one side and the South Korean president Moon Jae-in on the side of him. And then behind them, you've got another player with the sister right there. But that is like they're saying, it's almost put out there from the Times like it's a current picture. You don't know the date of, you don't know when that picture was taken, do you?
No, I have no idea. And I assume that some forensic techie person could figure it out. But yeah. I don't have that.
Well, I bring it up because they have it in the current story just from a day and a half ago here. You follow me? And with that headline that suggests like he's still alive, it's almost like the media is spinning this for them. You know what I'm saying, Ilana? You know, like everything else.
They have some useful idiots who are telling their story for them and doing a pretty good job. The thing is, he had at least three body doubles. And so, you know, any picture, even if it's taken recently, it doesn't mean
anything. Yeah, yeah. Let me bring people or make them aware, Ilana, about the rioting in Europe. Because, again, you never hear about any of these people. But, you know, this whole Black Lives Matter thing, and really the radical protest, and really is what we're talking about. Let me even rephrase that. The movement of Marxists around the world, not beyond even America here. So everything that happened here with Floyd in America has just was a tidal wave all over the world. And everybody's having their problems in Paris and in London and Zurich and just about everywhere here. They got rioting police, tear gas, violent protesters, rioters, anti-racism rallies in Paris and London, all kinds of things going on here. Tens of thousands of people marching, Ilana, in a lot of these different areas. Yeah, thrown objects at police again, a lot of unrest, all they're saying because of Floyd back in Minnesota is what they're blaming on. Even in Australia, by the way, they're marchers by the thousands and they're wearing masks and social distance, they're trying to push. And it's the same story everywhere. And in Paris, no justice, no peace, you know, the whole thing. What's the whole sense of this, Ilana? How crazy is the reverberations of this happening around the world? What do you see?
Well, I think it is crazy. You know, over the last few weeks, Malcolm, thousands of people have participated in violent protests all throughout Europe, in Stuttgart and Berlin and Brussels and Copenhagen, Madrid, Barcelona, London, and Australia. What's wrong with this picture? They're supposedly protesting George Floyd's death. Why do they care? And I'd like to give you an answer, and it's an important answer, and I think our listeners really need to hear this, because these are not spontaneous demonstrations and riots. They're well-organized. They're designed to destabilize democratic countries, particularly in the United States and Europe, and any English-speaking democracy. They follow a classic Marxist anarchist playbook, and it goes like this. Mobs of people are mobilized to participate in what looks like spontaneous reactions to triggering events, like the killing of George Floyd. And they are encouraged, even trained, to first destroy and loot. We saw that. Then target authority, like the police. Then the symbols of local history, like the statues. Then religion, like the new attacks against white Jesus. And then the government. This is the Marxist anarchist playbook. And it is, you know, you can read it. It has been published.
Yeah.
The tragedy of what's happening in America is that elected officials, all of whom are Democrats, by the way, have supported these demonstrations, even the destruction and the violence. Yeah. And one more thing, and this is something most people don't know, and it is so important. These organizations are not for grassroots groups. For example, the BLM Global Network spent $4.6 million on travel, consulting, and personnel costs over a three-year period from 2017 to 2019. The Ford Foundation and the Borealis Philanthropy just formed an organization called Black Lead Movement Fund, BLMF, and they plan to raise $100 million for the Movement for Black Lives. $33 million comes from George Soros, which he funneled through his Open Society Foundation and the Center for American Progress, both of which are affiliated with the Movement for Black Lives and Black Lives Matter. This is so huge, Malcolm, so comprehensive, an attack on democracy, that it is difficult to take it all in. But we have to. We stand to lose everything we believe in. And that's why the 2020 election is the most important one in our lifetime, because we are choosing between the American Democratic Representative Republic and anarchy.
What we really have here, and I'm absolutely convinced of it, the globalists are on the move. The globalist Marxist movement, they're on the move. It is organized. It is not random. It is not peaceful. It is none of the above. And their goal is to take down the West. Again, you've got an election coming up here, and they're in full mode, full throttle mode to take us out and down. There's no doubt in my mind. Let me bring on now Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro. He's a retired police lieutenant, director of school security, host of Chasing Justice. And when we say Chasing Justice, that means all kinds of justice, every level of justice, political justice, school justice, street justice, every kind of justice is what Joe chases every day there. You catch him on the network, his show at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Joe has a very fascinating read up there, as he always does. He makes you think. It's called A Case for War, which is what I want to talk about now. And Joe, you say here, when the American people are not just divided in thought or understanding, but in the very nature of who we are as a people and a nation, we are truly in a dangerous place. Such is where the seeds of revolution are sowed. That is a quotable quote if I ever heard one. Tell us why you say that.
Malcolm, your point in your opening of this segment is absolutely correct. The death of George Floyd was tragic, and it was horrific for all of us to watch. It was a singular incident, though, of one individual killing another. The ripple effect we've seen around the world, and I think because we see it around the world, gives you indications that this is a moment for other forces that have been looking for an opportunity. And we're seeing it very strongly here in America. The protests have all been overtaken by these revolutionaries and the Antifa and the anti-American groups. They've come out now, and they've basically hijacked the correct rage over someone being killed inappropriately.
And they're killing more people in spite of it, right? I mean,
yes, it's not ending. It's continuing out. So my purpose of this column and that quote that you had there is exactly what I'm saying. It's one thing for the American people to have two different ways for us to get to the same type of place. We need to solve any racial strife we have in our country. That is absolutely legitimate, and we can have a question about that. When these other groups get involved, and now you start to have American people that cannot even speak to each other, there is no conversation at all. The conversation, when people say that, let's have a conversation, what they mean is you agree with me or shut up. And we're now seeing that very, very strongly across the country. There is no talking to these groups, not the people who were protesting genuinely, because I think all of us were on board with that. That wasn't right what happened to that man, and we have to address that. But all of the other things that are going on, those are the forces that are trying to destroy America. They're going after Trump. They took their cue from that. Now you got all places in the world are going after the West. It is that classic East-West type of a thing. We've been fighting communism forever, whatever name it's called at the time, is always really good versus evil trying to take us down.
Oh, that's it. That is it, Joe. It is. And I just need everybody to really understand what we're talking about here. It's what I'm saying to you all the time, friends, this good and evil fight we discuss on a big level here. I mean, this is real life stuff, and the stakes could not be higher. You know, Joe, this election is coming so quick now, and I've been saying right along, the lights are going to come on quickly here. And as I pointed out early in the program, we played Biden's typical blunders about saying 120 million people dead with COVID and all this nonsense. They got them with a mask on. People are wearing masks in their cars. I was telling people early on, even when they're by themselves, they got a mask on in the car. People are brainwashing people. What's going on here? We're sort of losing control, and we're losing our grip more or less here. And there's a battering of information that are so disjointed and full of mistruths that are coming on that my theme is it makes our job here, Joe, at America Out Loud that much more important. I mean, our engines have to be revved at full throttle here now, because you're not getting any truth out there. The void is incredible. The news I just discussed in the segment before this, you won't hear anything we just talked about anywhere in the news cycle. And this is really the big problem, Joe, we're having. It's one thing we're trying to be taken down by Marxist globalists, these people who want to, you know, do to the world what they've done in select places. But it's another thing, the fact that nothing's being reported on accurately and people are ignorant and have no option to the truth here. Don't you think that's really, to me, the bigger crisis we're having?
Well, that's a crisis that's been going on for quite a while, the bias of our media. I mean, people talk about it now like it's a punchline. The danger of that, of the media absolutely slanting a story one way or another to meet their personal points of view is not only inappropriate, it is now dangerous, we can see. By not reporting the truth about what's going on, the average person that if they're not lucky enough to listen to America Out Loud and all of our programs here to get some truth, they're going by whatever they're being fed. And what they're being fed is the problem is not what it really is. The problem is Trump and his followers and their hatred. And that's just making people unable to respond appropriately because they're not getting that information. We all act on information and belief. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have real information, you're going to act on inappropriate stuff. And that's why we don't see, it's like the frog in the pot. Mm-hmm. The pot is starting to boil and we're going to stand here until it's too hot for us to get out. And that's where we have problem. And that's the purpose of my
Yeah, that pot is definitely boiling. I mean, it's not starting to. It's boiling up pretty well here now. When we talk about a case for war here, you say here, these two sides have no choice but to square off and have at it. We are that divided along these lines. The evidence is clear. The rhetoric of both sides is already engaged in open warfare, you say. And most of the media has chosen sides and promotes only whatever they want to promote. It's whatever they, and it really is about the destruction of liberty, you say here. So I would say back, the media has chosen their sides, Joe. That's really the message here. But when you're talking about those two sides now, and you really think we're coming to a moment of conflict here in the nation, I think you're saying that. And I think you're thinking, I'm not sure if you believe it's going to happen before the election or after the election. Explain that, please.
Yeah, I absolutely see something coming. Now, one of the things I tried to be clear about is that it's not one of those things. We don't know when the sequence of events that's going to lead to the Fort Sumter moment, when that shot is fired. No one can accurately predict that. But the fact that when people used to talk about this maybe coming second American Civil War, it was in the background. It was something that people said facetiously. They said it, you know, to be provocative. Now you're hearing regular people on social media, normal people, normal conversation saying, we can't go on like this. Something has to happen. And my point being the two sides, you cannot have two sides of a conflict so opposed in each other's faces this close before someone is going to throw a punch. And that punch is going to lead to the chaos we're seeing. The rhetoric that's out there right now is already, everything is hatred. Everything is violence. We have groups now threatening to come to the suburbs and hurt people and burn things. And people are saying, half the people in the country saying, that's right, that's a good idea. Do you realize the danger of these words? Because words mean things and words lead to action, whether it's now or later.
What do you think? Would you get? You don't really know. You don't have a guess whether it's before or after.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I think it's going to get much worse before the election. I think the rats are in the bottom of the ship and it starts to fill with water and they feel danger, they run to the upper decks. And as we get closer to this election, I think people who really want this change, who want this battle to come, are going to start rising up more. You're going to see much more things to attack standard America and Trump and everything America stands for.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of this, where we talked earlier in the program, people, about the polls and the bad information and the silent majority or whatever, and you know, and how the media just wants the drumbeat out there that, oh my God, Trump is losing. Oh my God, he's not going to win. Oh my God, we're going to have a President Biden. And of course they want, oh my God, is the point here, you know? So they build that narrative up accordingly, and they're brainwashing we the people out there, those people who are not as informed, I would say politely to you all, okay? They're trying to educate all those people in their warped sense of untruth is what they're doing, and mistruths and bold lies is what they are. And that they will create this momentum to push this, again, action to happen on November 3rd. So you also predict it's going to get harder before it gets better, and you're also predicting as the election comes things are going to get more serious. In fact, you say here, in a time not so long ago, the person who dared speak truth or even offer a different opinion was criticized and belittled for their thoughts and maybe called a name or whatever. Sure, we get that, okay? But now, today, the punishment has teeth, you say, and bullets and flames, you say. And now silence is demanded. If you disagree with the dogma of the mob, it's like, how dare you disagree with this, you SOB? We'll light your ass on fire, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's exactly true. And it was back in the day, you would be criticized. People would make fun of your point of view. Now, you get fired from your job if you say the wrong thing at the wrong time. If you write something that people don't agree with, that they can somehow twist into anti whatever's going on at the moment. And now they're burning down cities and they're threatening people, and people officers are being ambushed. They're calling to locations and offering fake stories to get the cops here. Then they're ambushed. If they're going to attack police officers blatantly for the purpose of attack, what will they do to you? And your point about this information, I teach a thing called a mental trigger. And a mental trigger is something that sets something off, just like a trigger in a gun makes the gun work. Well, the media are building the people up who are anti-Trump so strong, just like they did when it was Hillary. And then when he wins, if he wins re-election, you're going to see a bounce back reaction from these people who believed all along they finally got him. He's gone. The media's been telling us we're going to get Uncle Joe Biden, who's going to fix everything and make us all liberal. And they're going to lose their minds worse than they did last time. This time when they respond, they're going to respond with violence because that genie is already out of the bottle. They're already burning and shooting and attacking our symbols and everything, physically tearing things down and setting things on fire. What are they going to do the next time?
Yeah. What are they going to do the next time here? That's exactly it. A Case for War is a must read. He says here, to wrap up with you, he says, if we the people do not make the decision to preserve our nation, our liberties, rights, and our Constitution, there are others who will make that decision for us without batting an eye. Think about that, people. And let these words resonate with you. I'm going to give you next, please. These words should resonate with you and bring you to action. And Lieutenant Joe says, the winners of any conflict make the rules and decide the fate of the losers. If liberty and justice prevails, there will be forgiveness and mercy for the enemy. But if tyranny is victorious, there will be punishment and pain for the rest of us. The stakes are clear. Think about those words, people, as you go about your business. We are on the move here at America Out Loud. Again, as I say to you, our job is a big job. I really feel the weight of the nation and the world on our shoulders, because the battle for truth is such an important battle. So I can't say this any more than I am saying to you to get on board. We need all hands on deck here, please, to get the truth out. We cannot rely on the media. It is that simple, and we'll continue to bring it to you here all throughout America Out Loud, and certainly here on Viewpoint this Sunday here. Big thank you here to all of our guests today. And friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.